My name is Sophia Nelson. I'm going to be your moderator. And I apologize for my voice. I've been dealing with laryngitis on and off for months now. And it's because I talk too much. That's what's happening. But I'm really delighted to be here. I am a journalist and an author. I hail from the Washington, D.C. area. I have a new book out called The Woman Code, 20 Powerful Keys to Unlock Your Life. Some of you have cards on your chair. And that is what I'm doing with my life right now, running around and speaking and promoting the book on a book tour. So pretty exciting and delighted to be here in the city of brotherly love. Today it's the city of sisterly love. Mm-hmm. And what did you guys think of Diane Keaton? I thought she was awesome. My mom tells me that she literally walked right past me and I was playing with one of these things. And it's one of those moments you'll never get back. Diane Keaton literally walked right by you, and you were so busy looking at your freaking iPhone that you didn't see it. So there you have it. All right. I want to get started. We're going to do something a little bit different probably than other panels do. I'm not going to read through bios and do all that. I have three amazing ladies with me today who are going to really help you, particularly, you know, look, we're all at different stages of our lives, and if you're a young woman and you're just starting out, clearly you're not yet thinking about the boardroom, but you should be. Am I right? And if you're a seasoned professional woman, as we are seasoned, you like that word? Seasoned professional woman, as we are, then you definitely should be thinking about the boardroom, because if you are in senior management or senior leadership, or you're on your way up to the C-suite of your company or your industry, we need to be thinking about where the real power rests. And the real power is in the boardroom with the decision makers. And we all know the statistics and we all know the numbers, and they're dismal. The number of women that sit on boards, corporate boards, universities, hospitals, etc., is very small. I believe it's less than 5%, if I'm correct. It's more. They're telling me it's 17. I guess we're depending on if we're looking at corporate or different boards, but I'll take your number. That's a little bit more heartening, 17%. But again, it's going to be very industry-driven. You go to the automotive industry versus the fashion industry versus education, healthcare. You're going to see numbers ebb and flow depending on where women are, and I would suspect that in the STEM professions, those numbers are probably very low, and that's why Silicon Valley right now is having such a hard time, and Stanford is starting a new business school where they're going to actually teach women how to be entrepreneurs and do all these really amazing things in the STEM profession. So we're making strides, ladies. We're definitely making strides, but we still have a long way to go, I think. So let's talk about breaking down those barriers between us and the boardroom. I'm going to start and let them introduce themselves, say a little bit about themselves, and then I threw a question at them in our prep on the phone last week and told them to say something about themselves that they learned. It was kind of like one of those moments where you heard Diane Keaton sharing, one of those life-shaping moments with respect to the topic. So Nancy, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Karen and then to Barbara.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sophia. Since I'm the first speaker at the table here, can I have somebody raise their hand in the back? Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. Thank you very much. I'm Nancy Dunleavy, and as you're going to find out, I apparently am the only local panelist. I am here from Philadelphia. I am the owner of a small business, actually a company that works with nonprofit organizations, helping them to raise money, raise awareness, build strategy that gives them a bottom line. My company at this moment is 16 women, all of whom have chosen to make their careers in the space of social good and really charitable work. So my perspective on boards that I will be bringing to the conversation today is that it's truly one of the passions of my life. I enjoy being on boards. I enjoy recruiting for boards. Currently, I am on four nonprofit boards. I chair one of them, which is the Board of Trustees for Gwynedd Mercy University. So I have a real perspective not only on what is required and expected of a board member as a member, and also as the convener and chair of the trustee group, which is a position that I am just very, very humbled to hold. My little vignette, I guess, is really harkens back to probably 25 or more years ago when I was really getting my leadership feet wet in the space of board work. And a mentor of mine in the hospital business, which is where I was working at the time, really kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, if you really want to succeed in what is predominantly, you know, a man's world, I was the chief financial officer, she said, you need to get out there and get involved in organizations. So she signed me up for a committee of an event that was happening in the city, and it led to my first board experience. So I guess my takeaway from that is, you know, when someone taps you on the shoulder and says, you need to do this, don't say, yeah, but I'm too busy, or yeah, but I'm not, you know, I don't know what to do. Just do it.
That's good. All right, now listen. You guys need to tweet. You need to post. You need to share the wealth with other women. You need to pass it forward, pay it forward. Okay, so if you're a tweeter, tag at PennWomen, and then you can tag me at I am Sophia Nelson, and I'll retweet it. And the hashtag is PennWomen. And this session is, of course, breaking down barriers between you and the boardroom. So, again, tweet the nuggets of wisdom. Share. Let other women know what you're hearing. And she just said something really, really good that I like, which is, you know, kind of life's going to present you with some opportunities. And when it taps you, don't run, don't duck, don't make excuses. Just do it. Okay. Karen.
Good afternoon. Karen Dale. I'm the executive director for AmeriHealth District of Columbia. It's the local office for AmeriHealth Caritas, who's been a proud sponsor of this conference for, I think, many years. I don't know how many, but it's only my second one. What I would share with you is that 15 years ago, someone picked me in terms of someone they wanted to sponsor and mentor. And to this day, that person is still my sponsor and my mentor. And what was wonderful about the time and space in which he picked me was I was a single mom and younger than most of my counterparts in the business. And so the fact that he picked me, I thought, okay, I wonder what it is that he sees. What he said to me was, you need to make time. He says, you work very hard, and I'm certain you will be successful at anything you choose to do. However, you don't make time. And I was, make time for what? I think I'm a pretty good mom. I'm doing really well at my job. And he said, you have to make time to go and meet other people, not the same people you see every day. And I thought, well, I don't have time for that. But what he did, which was really wonderful, was he said, I will help you. And so he did. He invited me to things that he was going to. And he taught me something that I still do today, which is decide who are the people in the room you need to meet.
Oh, that's good. And put a pin in that. Stop.
Go up to them and introduce yourself. And so I would offer you those two things. Make time and actually be targeted. Go and meet the people that you need to meet.
Karen, I want to stay there for a minute with me. You said something really, really, really good. You said, know who the people are in the room that you have to meet. Break that down a little bit. You can't just say something that good and not break it down. What does that mean?
Sure. So my mentor's name is Randy. He always told me that I need to think about where I'm headed. Because, you know, I would get all good feeling about doing well in the job I was in. He said, be thinking about where you're headed, whether it's board service, whether it's your next career step. And think about those people who can get you there. So he knew I wanted to serve on boards. He also knew that I felt I was ready for a change in career. So he kept saying to me, you need to be looking on websites and looking at who the board members are. You need to think about the people who are going to be at that event that can help you. And he's very instrumental in knowing people. I mean, he has a Rolodex to die for. So he would, you know, help me by saying, go talk to that person. And at first, he would help usher me, but he wanted me to build my confidence. So sometimes he would simply point them out just to see if I would, you know, have the confidence to do that. And I will tell you, over time, that ability to walk up to someone, look them in the eye, shake their hand, get to know them very quickly, and then tell them what it is you want to do is such an important skill. I have a 5-year-old. I have bookends. I have a 5-year-old and a 23-year-old. And when people meet my children, they're like, I know those are your kids. Because they will always lean in, look you in the eye, and they're very clear all the time. And that is a skill we need to continue to build as women, because we Absolutely. Tend to shy away. Someone said it earlier that we wait for someone to kind of come in to us. We've got to become much more targeted and focused in going out and being clear about our story. What have you accomplished? What do you do that adds value to any business, to any board?
Okay, so she said some really good things, and I like to recap them because, again, the point of these sessions is for you to learn, to grow, and to have takeaways that you can actually put into practice in your life. It's not just so you, like she said, feel all good, whatever. You want some tools to help you unlock your potential. So first thing I heard first two people is power of sponsors and mentors. Huge. You got to have mentors and you have to have sponsors. And we can get into how they're different a little later. Next thing I heard was make time. Make time for you. That's what he told you. And in doing so, it changed your life, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the last thing is, she said, think about where you are headed. Be focused. Have a goal. Have a dream and know how you're going to get there. Very important. Okay, Barb.
So hello, I'm Barbara Berlin. I'm a director in PwC's Center for Board Governance, and we are also a sponsor of this wonderful conference. So delighted to be here today. And I guess mine is a little close to Nancy's when I was thinking about my little story. And you know, through my years at PwC, and I know it's shocking to me that I've been there over 20 years at this point, as I progressed in my career, I had mentors within the firm. And as many of you know, it was a fairly dominated male firm many years ago. I'd say we definitely have come a long way in that regard. And so as new opportunities were presented to me, it was one to have the confidence to say yes, but to have those mentors who said to you, you should take on this role. It's good for you. You really will be proud of it when you're done. You have the skills to do it. And you needed that support to really allow you to take that next step. And one additional point I would add to that is not only the internal sponsors at work, but probably one of the mentors that I've had for the longest period of my life is an outside mentor from my firm. And it's a woman that I've worked with for 15 years. She's in the financial world. But her outside perspective, her ability to see me in a different light than the people at work, know what my interests were, was also a really wonderful way to give me the confidence to step up in those roles.
Very good. Okay, so what we're going to do now, again, is the goal of this is to give you tools on how to successfully break down barriers. We're talking about boards as the goal, but I think we would all agree that we want you to learn how to excel in your career, set yourself up to win so that someday you can be on a board or have access to that. So they're going to give you some really good stuff. So, again, start tweeting, take notes, write it down, and share it, because the retention of this stuff, sometimes it's really good, and you're, like, excited, but you forget it after you walk away and you go do something else. So first question, and this is for all of you, and I may pick different questions for different ladies. But the first one I want you all to answer, because I think it's an important question. You know, when you think of being on a board, I think every woman in the room would agree, it seems like an elusive thing, right? It's pretty big deal. I mean, wow, board of directors of a company, of a hospital, of a university, nonprofit, whatever. That seems like a pretty lofty, unattainable thing. So what I'd like you to answer is really two questions. First of all, why do we need women on boards? Why does it matter? And how do you get there? Now, I know I've wrapped all the other ones, but stick with me. It's all good. You could start. We'll start this way. I start with you first. I'll start with you, Barb.
Okay. So why do we need women on boards? Well, first off, it's a wonderful advancement in your professional careers at that next level. And when you look at boardrooms today, and when I said I'm a director in PwC's Center for Board Governance, I spend about 50% of my time in boardrooms, corporate boardrooms. So I'm speaking from that perspective on this panel. 9 out of 10 people in those boardrooms are white males. I think that's probably not a surprise to many of you. And as we said, only 17%, and that's actually of S&P 500 directors, are women. 4% of S&P 500 boards do not have any women in today's day and age. So those numbers are pretty dismal. But what you need in a boardroom is diversity of thought. And I mean diversity from the broadest sense, whether it be different ages, different genders, different ethnicities, different countries of origin. But you need to have some variety in there to really do justice to the board's role. So when you look at that and you say, well, why do women need to be boards? And I'll focus on women. There are a number of studies that have been done that have linked board performance with women on it to bottom line profit. And a number of organizations have done it. Credit Suisse has done one just in 2012 that showed a 26% improvement to bottom line results for boardrooms with women in it than those without women. That's a pretty astonishing number. And there are other studies that also support this theory. European Commission did a report and showed the same results. So you say, well, how do they get to that connection? Well, I know this will come as a great surprise to many of you in the room, but women are really good team players. So they definitely have the skills, and you would know that we have a little more sensitivity measures. We are a little more engaging in getting more people involved in the conversation, and we are better listeners for the most part. So building people that have better team ability into a boardroom enhances board culture and team culture. And ultimately, that's been linked even through a study done by Harvard Business School that better teams get better results. I think we can all make that connection. So women in the boardroom can lead to better results for companies and can give them that diversity of perspective.
That's good stuff. Karen?
I would say that the importance, in addition to what was said already, is around shareholder or stakeholder representation. Find it hard to believe that there would be a company that doesn't have women that buy their products, that doesn't have women that work at some level in the company, or that are shareholders, right? So why would we want to have a board that does not represent us in any of those roles? So I think the whole piece that we should be represented in those companies so that they are understanding our interests, our dreams, you know, what's important to us is just, it has to happen. And there's so many people or other countries where women are revered in terms of that, to the point that in several other countries they've made a goal to be much further ahead than we are. We've made a goal for, I think, 20% by 2020. In other countries, they're talking about 40%. They're not asking why, they're asking how. They have even put laws in place. And so, you know, I really look forward to, we talked in the plenary session about the power of our voice. You know, we should be demanding that we will be represented, right? And 2020 shouldn't define the moment which that representation stops.
So I can add very little to my colleagues here, but I would want to underscore the notion of diversity of thought. And really, you know, in my work as a board member or chair, the richness of conversation that is achieved when you have people that are from different professions, different generations, different genders. I mean, it really makes an enormous difference to the depth and breadth of conversation. And, you know, in my experience only, you know, boards that are dominated by men tend to be very abrupt and sort of almost speak in shorthand.
They're men.
Well, and women, you know, women value conversation and really getting the you know, input of others. And I think that that leads to decisions that really can be sustainable and benefit the stakeholder groups. I mean, I think that you know, both of you brought, you know, the real essence to this. And it's just more fun to have, you know, different voices in the room. I mean, if everybody is saying the same thing, I mean, seriously?
Yeah, I think that's right. You brought up a point, Karen, that I kind of want to, I told you I'm probably not sticking to many of these questions.
We're getting that.
Right. But I think you said something very important about the power of the voice, right? And the question really is, you're right, women are consumers. Women are 50%+ now of the workforce. In 47% of homes, they are the breadwinners, the primary breadwinners. Now I'm talking about among married couples, not single moms. We have a lot of power in the economy, right? Why do we still settle for being relegated to the B seats or the C seats? What's going on with us, and why don't we raise our voices and raise our power? Nancy, I'm going to start with you and work our way back.
So I think part of the reason that we don't is that there hasn't really been the invitation to do that. I think recently there's been some energy. I mean, I don't think that it's a welcomed thing to be intruding, you know, yourself and saying you should put me on your board, because that really runs.
Men do it all the time.
Well, it runs counterculture to the conditioning that we, at least in my generation, I'll say, and some of our next gen leaders are much better equipped. Or let me back up. Not equipped. It isn't about equipment. It's about sort of, you know, feeling the comfort with raising that and raising their hand a little sooner. You know, I think the point that one of our panelists made earlier about the, you know, the consumer. I mean, personally, I look at the stock that is in my portfolio, and if they don't have women on it, I'm selling that stuff because they don't have. I mean, for real. And that, you know, but no, I don't just sell it, and not that I have that big of a share of anything, but I always write a letter to the chairman and say, here's why I sold you out of my portfolio. I mean, until you get it, I'm not putting my money in your company.
Great. She made some really excellent points. And again, you know, I know when you're looking at the topics in the pamphlet here, you know, breaking down barriers to boardroom success probably doesn't sound really sexy and exciting, but I can't think of something more important, because the power really rests from there down. And so it's very important that we're having this discussion. And Nancy just dropped some good things on you about generational issues, about how women feel about themselves. And you would know this well, Barb, because it's you have baby boomers now, Gen Xers, and Gen Y all in the same work culture. And I have friends in HR
tell
me it's a nightmare.
Still, some of the traditionalists are still in the workforce.
Wow.
My company has all four generations represented in it.
That's unbelievable. You have thoughts on the question asked about, you know, raising the voice, since you were the one that kind of raised it. How do we do it? Like, tell us how. It's nice to say we should, but how?
So the first is to acknowledge that as women in our roles, we are still evolving. Mm. You know, so there's this pressure to be good at everything, and you often might end up making choices, and the choice might not be to add another responsibility that comes with serving on a board. So I understand that. But we do need women to understand that to create the change we want to see, more of us have to make the choice to be on a board. And we can do that by supporting each other to get there. Some steps I would suggest: if you check out a website, I always have to write things down. My memory isn't as good as it used to be. WOB.com, Women on Boards. So if you believe that you can make the time to balance and you have people who will support you to serve on a board, check out this website. Here's what I want you to think about. This website gives a directory in alpha order where you can search and figure out how many women are on boards. So you can then target those organizations that you're interested in. You should always know where you're headed. So if you're interested in a not-for-profit board, then there are lots of places you can look for that. Most communities have great resources at their universities to support women to get on boards. Many executive search firms will help you to get on boards as part of the service they offer, so they're always interested in people coming to them with that wish. The other piece is you should have a board resume. So when you find that organization that you want to get on their board, you're going to have that board resume, which doesn't mean you've served on a board before. It means you have a set of attributes and accomplishments that you know will be valuable to them. Find someone that you know that's already served on a board, have them look at it, give you some feedback. Have them interview you from the perspective of a board member. Those are things that you can do to be ready, right? In life, preparation is a big portion of it. You want to be ready when that opportunity presents itself.
Mm-hmm. Barb?
Great panelist here. I guess I would say the outlook is looking a little bit better. I know we've had a snail's pace movement on women in boardrooms, but when you think about the average age of a director being 63 years old, and most of them stay on a board until retirement, and the retirement age has increased recently from 72 to 75, the turnover at the board level is pretty low. Now, shareholders vote on directors each year, and about 90% support for almost all directors. I mean, that's an average, of course. So the turnover isn't happening at a great speed. But the good news is, as more women have gotten on boards, and the men that are on the boards are generally older and have the longer tenures, you will see more women on boards. Now, would we like something faster? Of course, but I can tell you at least from the little bit I can see right now, I also know that a number of corporations have made internal statements to add 30% quotas of women on boards. So I'm going to add a little bit to what Karen said. What should you do? You know, how do you get that opportunity and to be prepared? And I would say, ask yourself the question, what can I give to a board? So what skills do I have to enable me to serve on a board? And I will tell you, when they're looking for director candidates, the first thing they're looking for is operational experience. They want people that have owned P&Ls, that know how to run a company, because a lot of a board's work is strategic oversight and risk oversight. So they want that vision. And then they also look for industry experience and financial expertise are probably the three top areas that they're looking for board candidates. So I would tell you that you should build relationships, and I'll add, with a purpose, similar to what Karen was saying. Find boards that you think you might be good for based on your skill sets, and then look for a way to get introduced to some of the board members on that, whether it be through a friend of a friend, but somehow find a way to network to meet people on those boards that might be good candidates for you.
May I add something?
Sure.
So part of it is that you may not always get on the board the first time, right? Be flexible if it's a board you really want to serve on, because you might be able to help in other ways. You might serve on a committee. You might serve on some specific ad hoc project that they have. When you state your openness to serve the organization in varying ways, that also gives the organization a sense of your commitment to them and puts you ahead when they're looking for and selecting board members.
I think that's good. Okay, so I'm going to skip down and I'm going to ask you, because we asked why do we need women on boards and, you know, kind of made the business case for it, makes good business, et cetera, but what are the benefits? Let's talk about the benefits of to the person serving on the board as a woman. What benefits does it bring to you when you serve on a board, and, you know, that would really make someone inspired to pursue that path, if you will?
So I'll take a stab at that, because it really is, I think, so I want to take one step back, though, and let's be clear. The boards that are corporate boards where nobody leaves the job until they're forced out at 75, they're getting paid a lot of money to be a director. The nonprofit boards are much easier to get appointed to, and 9 out of 10 times you're going to be expected to give money.
That's right.
There's a difference.
And raise money.
Exactly. So it's a good place to start and learn, but it's a different environment entirely. So I'll take the question about what are the rewards. The rewards are enormous. So each of the boards, in my experience that I've served on, are in different sectors than the business that I am in. So what that does is give me unbelievable, essentially free, in some ways I'm paying because I'm contributing money, but education into business models and sectors that are really, really important to our community. So, you know, in my little portfolio right now, higher education, tourism and marketing of the region, the philanthropy foundation, so giving money away, and then the leadership pipeline. So I really, and all of those boards attract different leaders to their governance. So for me, it is an enormously valuable and fertile ground to meet people that I otherwise would never cross paths with. The other thing that I would say is that's really important is if you're going to serve on a board, show up and do the work.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't do that, your own credibility will be really damaged, and your efforts to, you know, find people that will be promoters for you or sponsors for you in the boards that you aspire to be part of will say, you know what, she says yeah and doesn't do it. So that is the number one reward to me.
I think she gave such a good answer. We'd agree. I'm going to give you guys another question, but I really think that she said something very powerful, because if you're looking, it really depends on why you're looking to be on a board, right? If you're looking to be paid a lot of money, first of all, you've got to be, like, one of my mentors is Alexis Herman, former Secretary of Labor, right? Alexis Herman's on a number of boards. She keeps a low profile now. You don't see her anymore. You know, she's doing well. Mm-hmm. American Express, a number of, you know.
Yeah.
And when you get those blue chip boards, and that's kind of, I think you made a great distinction, because we want to be clear. You can get there, but that's really, am I right? Like, to get on the blue chip, you know, American Express, Xerox, whatever, you got to be somebody major, Oprah-type person, whatever. Doesn't mean you can't get there, because you can. But what they're talking about is how you build yourself. And I really like what you said about the people you meet. Because when you serve with people, you connect with people. I think every one of us would agree that every job we've ever gotten, I've never, ever, ever applied for a job in my life, ever. It was done because somebody picked up the phone and liked me and said, you need to talk to her. Like you said, you go over there, you do this. And I was an attorney before I became a journalist and a writer. So I'm curious, I'm going to segue. Is that true in your experience that the networking piece that boards gives you is enormous?
Huge. It's huge. It's you can't replicate it.
Barb?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's how people find director candidates. We do a survey each year. 1,000 directors respond. Again, I'm speaking from a corporate board level. 9 out of 10 of them look to their network to identify an open board position. So if 9 out of 10 board members are male, and 9 out of 10 times they look to their network, likely their network is made up of males. So that's who they're looking to. So as women are getting on boards and they're looking to their network, they probably have more women in their network just by the nature of how we work. So the opportunities will continue to grow. And I would add that director pay for Fortune 500 companies is like $250,000. So.
Let me tell you why I'm squinching my face up a little bit. I think everything you said was right, and then Karen, I'm going to give you a different nuance to the same question. I'm trying to mix this up a little bit because, again, we talk about boards and it gets a little like, okay, and I want women to really get more. I think we're being macro, is it micro, and we need to be more macro. But I was squinching my face because I'm gonna throw a monkey wrench in this, and I'm gonna throw this at you, Karen. So, do you really believe women help other women? They lift other women as they climb?
Yes.
Okay, back that up.
Absolutely. Part of where some women are get accused of not being helpful is, in fact, the person who is seeking the help not being clear. Right. So I've been fortunate to have people say, I want to help you. And when they do, I have a list. Right. Here is what I need from you. It's not about a handout, but it's about clarity. So when someone says, you know, I can help you, I say, well, here's some things I'm working on, right? I want to be able to do X with a time frame. Just saying you want to be on a board, well, do you want to do it 3 years from now, 5 years from now? Are you ready tomorrow if I gave you? I mean, so we've got to learn to speak in terms of specificity. What does success look like? Start with the end in mind. Put all the colors and the details in that picture so someone can actually help you get there. People ask me to mentor them all the time, and that's one of my first things I ask them to do. Tell me if I were the best mentor, the best sponsor, the best helpful person you've ever met, what will success look like? Because I want to be there to celebrate that with you, but I can't if I don't know what you're talking about.
So this is really good what she said, because let me tell you why. Because one of the things that I think holds us back as women, particularly from breaking that glass ceiling, and boards is the ultimate breaker of glass ceilings, right? Because you're in the yes, Nancy, you're making a face. You don't agree?
Yeah, I do.
I just want to be sure. Okay, so like the thing that's important is how stereotypes about each other come into play to be barriers to our success. And I think you just said something I probably really hadn't heard before, and I've heard a lot, which is that sometimes we're just not clear. And when the opportunity arises for someone to mentor, sponsor, open a door for you, you're not ready for it. Or when you ask for the help, you don't ask the right way, and then you accuse that other woman and say, she's mean, she doesn't like women, she won't help me. Have you ever had that happen? Where people think you didn't want to help them, you actually were more than willing to help them, but they came to you kind of, to borrow one of my favorite words, raggedy. They just weren't ready. And one of the things I don't want any woman in this room to ever do is go, particularly because you're only going to get one shot at it. Am I right? So if you go to that potential, one of these ladies here is a mentor or a sponsor, and you approach them and you're not sure of yourself, like you said, you don't have a good grip on your firm handshake, you don't have positive energy, you've probably lost your opportunity. Not always, but probably. I mean, talk about that. What makes you want to mentor a younger woman and help her up? Yeah, all of you can answer that.
I'll just do a quick story. So about a year ago, a young woman I had never met finds me. She actually calls my assistant. So my assistant says, I have this person on the line. I'm thinking, I know my memory's not the greatest sometimes, but I'm like, I don't recognize her name. And I don't know, I thought, well, I'll talk to her anyway, right? So she gets on the line, and she starts off by saying, you don't know me. And I said, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I was really worried that somehow I met you and I should know who you are. So she saw an ad, because we had just launched last year in the district market. So she saw an ad, and then she saw a newspaper article, and she thought, I want to talk to this person. She said, then I looked you up, and I saw that you were on different boards and that you're speaking. I watched a couple YouTube videos of you speaking. And she said, I wanted to meet you. She said, so I figured out the phone number. And so she called actually our member services line. And she insisted that she needed to talk to me. So that's why they transferred her to my assistant. And she said, I want us to meet face to face. I want to either have coffee or lunch. I'm buying. You just tell me when. She said, I'm a student, so I have a lot of money. But I'm buying, right? And she said, if it's okay with you, I would really like to do this before the end of the month.
Wow.
You know my answer was yes. Because, one, the fact that she took the time and invested and got all the way to my assistant, and that she had a time frame in mind, right? And when she came with a little notebook. We met at Starbucks, and she read through what she wanted. She said, I want you to introduce me to a few people. Here are the things that, I mean, she had a list, right? And so she and I still occasionally email each other, but that's the level of specificity I'm talking about. You have to decide. She didn't know me. At all. I mean, I was just so struck by that. Like,
so the difference between you and me is I would have hired her. Seriously.
You know, what's interesting, and Barbara, that's a great story. Couple takeaways from that. Again, young ladies in the room, particularly if you're under 35, listen to this. This is good stuff, because we didn't have, if you're over 40, we just didn't have these kind of conversations. They didn't exist. There weren't ladies like us and some of you out there. And it always, I wish I was still on that other side of the conversation, but it changes. And you're amazed at, we're age cohorts up here. And, look at how much change there's been just in 20, 25 years. And the question I would ask is, in our culture, though, I would have been afraid of her. I would have thought she's stalking me, kind of crazy, really? Like thing. No, and I'm being facetious, but I'm throwing it out to you. What is the line, right, of when we help, when we know, how far do you go? Let's talk about the mentor-sponsor thing a little bit with the nuance of what you said, which is this young lady was very assertive. I didn't use the word aggressive. She was assertive. Because guys do this stuff all the time, and guys reward them for it. But a lot of women would have been taken aback by it and been like, she went over the top a little too much. She called my number. I don't know. What do you think about that? What are those lines? When do we know,
Well, I think that is a bit of what you're saying. The culture has changed a lot, and the tools available to people have changed a lot. And that was a little bit of, even a better story of relationship building with a purpose, seeking out someone that you really want as your mentor and doing that justice of meeting and having specificity. And I would tie that to Sheryl Sandberg, who's written the book Lean In, the COO of Facebook. And she said, and when we were young, they used to call women bossy, and I say they have executive leadership skills. Mm-hmm. So I think the world is changing. Mm-hmm. And I guess as I think about mentoring people and, kind of the advice I give on that front, it kind of ties to what you were saying as well, Karen, is the need to have executive presence. Know where you're going, but present yourself in a way that is similar to the way people are in boardrooms. If you want to be a board member, act like a board member.
Very good.
And look like a board member.
Right. Say that one again.
So if you want to be a board member...
No, say it again.
Act like a board member and look like a board member.
That's important.
And paraphrased a little differently, I had great advice from a mentor many, many years ago, and that was, Nancy, dress for the job you want, not the job you have.
Wow, that's good. Now, look, we've got about 10 minutes left, am I right? So, and I've completely veered off script because I think they really nailed the board thing, and I wanted you to get some more wisdom from them. But I'm going to end it with, I'm going to ask you, some more board-specific questions, and... You've already covered so many of these things in here, too, but I think number 5 is a good one, which is, what advice do you have to help current women executives improve their brand and executive profile? Now, brand is a great conversation to have. You kind of just touched on it, right?
Yeah.
But give the ladies, each of you, some takeaways, some keys, some tools that they can use to better build their brand, and you got to tell them what a brand is and profile.
Well, I'll start there and go down the line. Maybe I'll ask a question. How many of you have been in front of a board?
Okay,
so a pretty good number in here, which is great news. And I guess I'm just going to expand slightly on what I just said about executive presence. And I will tell you, in the past year, I've spent a lot of time with new individuals that have moved into leadership roles, mentoring them about how to have executive presence. And from that, when you're in front of a board, you have to understand that they have about 15 minutes of time. They don't have an hour. Maybe they have 30 minutes. They have pretty packed agendas, and they really like things in kind of bite-sized pieces, I would term them. So when you're going to meet somebody, when you're going to introduce yourself to somebody, when you're in front of a boardroom, prioritize your message. Make certain you know what your message is and what the takeaways are. Be specific. I guess I'm kind of wrapping this up. Be specific in that regard. Board members do not want to know about process. They want to know about outcomes. So make certain you think about what the outcome is, what they need to know from their perspective, and make it relevant to them. They are, as you said, the top leaders and decision makers in the company. So you have to think about what they want to know at their level. And I would just add to that, even as I started in this path, 10 years ago, and I really enjoy my role, I was intimidated by them. And maybe this is where I should have started my message this morning, is they are people. They are real people, and they are very easy to talk to, and they are human. And I think while they're very successful, many of them CEOs of organizations, they are people, and they're happy to talk to you.
You know, I just had a Brady Bunch moment. Okay, so if you're too young to remember the Brady Bunch, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about. Remember the episode where Jan didn't want to make the speech, and Mr. Brady's like, picture everybody in their underwear? And he's like, then you won't be afraid of them? What she's saying is really true. They're people. Yes, they have power. Yes, they have networks. Yes, they have access. But at the end of the day, that's really good. That don't be afraid. You don't have anything to be afraid of. The worst anybody can ever say is no. Okay, then you go find another door. Karen.
Two things to build your brand. The first is speak up. Not just blah, blah, blah. But you have to get noticed when there's a sea of other people, which means read up on things, know what are the important issues, know what are the business issues, whatever the interest in terms of a board is, you're going to have to do some work so that you can add to the conversation. Mm-hmm. If you're just sitting quietly, you won't be noticed, right? So you have to have something relevant and important to say to add to the conversation. Doesn't always have to be that you are saying something. If you've studied up on an issue enough that you can ask a really good question, that gets people's attention. You're like, oh, that was a very smart, you know? So, right? So do some homework and speak up. The second thing I would suggest is find opportunities to practice skills that are important to boards. Things like facilitation, negotiation, right? So wherever you are and you have opportunities to use those skills so that other people can notice, and, oh, that was, did you see how she handled that? Nothing speaks more than your actual behavior. Having people who are on boards or looking for board members or who know other people that are looking for board members see those skills in action, they will notice and they will say to someone else, you know, I was at a meeting the other day or wherever and I met this person who just really did a great job fill in the blank, right? So your behavior needs to be seen in terms of the evidence of what a board needs so that someone will recommend you.
And just adding to these really great recommendations, I would say value everyone's opinion in the room and acknowledge it. I'm now more approaching that as a facilitator because there are inevitable disagreements and controversies, and there are times when an expert in the room will take the conversation way off topic, and the ability to learn how to bring that back without embarrassing or without embarrassing the person is really a valuable lesson.
Can I interject one more thing? As you were both saying this, there was one other point I wanted to make that I think is really critical. Practice. It doesn't come naturally to everybody, and it doesn't come probably naturally to many people. You can read what you want to say and think it through. Say it out loud. Practice. That's how you really clean up your speaking. That's how you really get comfortable with what you want to say. And it's very different when you say it out loud. And I will tell you, in now seeing a lot of executives present, I know they're practicing. You don't just show up and present like that. They are being coached and they're practicing. Mm-hmm. So I would take that as a key takeaway.
Okay, so how much time? We have 5 minutes left. So let's do a wrap of what you want every woman in this room to know about boards, why they matter, and why they should be on one. So each of you just give them a couple nuggets. Boards, why they matter, and why they should strive to be on one. I'll start with you, Karen.
It matters because we have to live with a purpose and create the changes that we want. And each of us has a way that we can uniquely contribute to make that happen. So you figure out what corporation, what not-for-profit board, what way you plan to contribute, there's just no choice but to leave things better than we found it. So boards are a great way for you to make that unique contribution.
Good. Nancy?
I would fully concur. I think
I'm tweeting what you guys are saying.
So. I think that there are so many benefits to the individual and the individual who serves, the community that benefits, and you know, with leadership comes responsibility to pass that on and pay it forward.
Okay,
and I would just concur with that. We have a voice, and our voice should be heard. We have a lot to give. And I think the value you get, if you ask a board member why they do what they do, as Nancy said, it's the value you can provide. And so the value you can provide to an organization and the personal satisfaction you can feel for that is just a wonderful thing.
All right, now, let's do some questions. We only have a few minutes left, so if you have a question, and, you know, we can go over maybe a minute or two, but if anybody has any questions, come up to the mic and feel free to ask. Or raise your hand and I'll come to you. Okay. State your name.
Hello, I'm Janelle Snyder. I'm an intellectual property law attorney for a boutique firm. And I am over the 35-year mark.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So am I.
And I'm wondering, it's hard to ask for help. Is there any kind of additional advice you can give on, I don't have any mentors, finding one? That was really great advice about how specific you need to be, but just I was taught that you do it on your own. You don't ask for help. So I don't know, any advice you can offer there?
Practice small. Ask for things that are really easy to say yes to, and you just have to practice. I mean, let's have coffee.
Thank you. I would love that.
See, I was going to say, so have you ever been dared to do something?
I have been told I can't do something, and then that seems to spark a fire.
Well, I would say that just put something on your calendar with a time frame and force yourself to do it. So when my friend Randy said to me, make time, I was like, make time how? You know, but he helped me by saying, okay, so next week we're going to something. So off we went. He challenged me to do something I still do today, which is find three people you don't know and get to know them. So I still do that. He gave me, I'm like you, right? So tell me I can't do something, right? So he gave me something to do. You can give yourself something to do. You could say that you're going to take her up on coffee before the end of this month. Mm-hmm. Give yourself the time frames, which one of the reasons I think it's important that we self-start on some of these things is because otherwise it's too easy to put it onto someone else. So somehow you have to dig deep and self-start. It helps us to have much more sustainable impact in terms of the things we want to achieve.
And I agree with them. It really is a cultural change, though. I mean, I think, you know, I felt very much like you, not able to ask until you start asking. So I think give yourself the right to ask, and the worst that can happen is somebody could say no, and guess what? You're still going to be okay. So allow yourself, and sometimes the best lessons we learn are from where people say no or we fall down. So give yourself the chance. That's what I would say.
All right, great. Any final questions before we wrap it up?
I have another one.
Wait a second. Hold that for a second. Let me see if anybody else in the room.
No, she's practicing asking. Go ahead.
I
know, Janelle.
Liked
get
that.
Up here.
I liked that.
Get up here, Janelle.
Listening to us.
Go ahead.
So this is actually for you, Karen. It's about something that you just mentioned. I am a very good networker. I find it hard to build the lasting relationships with people, though, and I think it's just a matter of not having enough time. Or maybe I'm not picking the right people to try to build those relationships with. I'm not sure. Do you have any advice on that?
It would come back to the goals you have. So when you ask someone, like, let's play it out, that you decided to actually have coffee with her, right? Or have a phone conversation. Prior to that conversation, knowing what you want to ask for as you go forward is important. Last week, Sometimes I'm just booked so close in meetings that, you know, I tend to only have 30-minute meetings because I think people should really come prepared, right? So this woman comes to meet me for the first time, 30 minutes, and I'm running 10 minutes late. So she's now down to 20 minutes, and she says, okay, I've reprioritized what I'm going to ask you about, and I'm going to just jump into it if that's okay with you. Okay. It's interesting when you are that clear with people, they usually give you permission. Very rarely are they going to tell you back up, right? So she says, first, I want to see if you'll be interested to serve on our board. And I said, unfortunately, I'm already on four. It would be really difficult for me to do a good job being on another. She went straight to plan B. We're planning for next year's event. Would you be on the sponsorship, the host committee? I said, sure. And she said, well, since you can't be on the board, do you have at least three names you could give me? Then she said, and I will follow up with you next week. So it's you creating the script, right? And yesterday she followed up. I mean, so it's like, but you know what I do? Is any of those types of things that I have to do, they're actually on my calendar, mm-hmm. right? So the person who says, Karen, you know, I wonder if we could touch base once a week, I say, okay, let's get calendars. It may not be the same day each week, but let's actually put it on the calendar. I use driving time. I have an hour commute going and coming. It's a great time for me to talk with people. But they get the time because they have been clear. And they don't disappoint. So when they've asked me for the time, they're like, oh, I get a reminder email the day before, confirm it. You know what I mean? So I have a lot of confidence that you are capable to do this. I'm going to loan you some of mine, okay? And people know I'm pretty, you know. But I'm going to loan you some of mine so that you can launch, because I'm very confident that you walking up here, not having one question but two, says something to me about your ability to drive this train.
Thank you.
All right, give these ladies a round of applause.